I'm correspondent Tom Wilmer. Come along and join me in Sugar Land, Texas, for a visit with the Director of Economic Development, Elizabeth Huff. Right now, the city of Sugar Land is in the midst of reimagining engaging reuse possibilities for the old Imperial Sugar Empire's massive, century-old brick buildings. And this is just one component of the city's imaginative initiatives to propel community engagement and attract new businesses. Come along and join the conversation with rising star Elizabeth Huff. We're in Sugar Land, Texas. Right now, we're with Elizabeth Huff, the Director of Economic Development. Tell us about your world here. And we maybe start back in time, because like a lot of people, the hook that first got me is Sugar Land?
Yep.
Why? What?
Definitely. So what drew me to this community is that our name, Sugar Land, came from our founding company. Imperial Sugar came to this area and established their company. It was actually incorporated before the state of Texas was even incorporated.
Wow.
Yeah. So it's the oldest business in the entire state.
It was born and bred in Texas. I love it.
So our history is a company town, which is what the premise of economic development is you bring in employers who are manufacturing, distributing, or selling goods and services outside of your community, and it draws people. And then the more people you have, the more goods and services you get within your own community. So you kind of build off of that. Mm-hmm. And so Sugar Land, Imperial Sugar, is the epitome of the best example of what economic development is. We are a company town. The company came here. They founded, they started building, and they even at that time built the homes for their employees.
Wow.
They built the school, they built a hospital. So they built all the infrastructure to make it a community. Mm-hmm. And so that's what kind of drew me, of like that history of what came and founded us. And so
one more thing about Imperial Sugar, it was not that long ago when they closed their doors here.
Yep. So our goal has been to work with them, or they sold the property. And mm-hmm. so we've been working to try to figure out how to redevelop the property. And a few of the iconic buildings are still left here. And so how do we pay tribute to our history and acknowledge why we're here? We're all here because Imperial Sugar came and decided to make this spot along Oyster Creek and by the Brazos River, their hometown, to manufacture their sugar.
And what a great historical artifact structures that still remain.
Absolutely.
And have fabulous potential for reuse. Talk to us about some of the buildings mm-hmm. that remain and what the grand vision is for how to repurpose.
Absolutely. So our most iconic building is called the Char House. It's right along the railroad and the road called Kempner Street, and is actually a brick building that was built around the equipment called charring equipment that charred the sugar. And so if you were to peek in there, there's not really any floors. So it is literally an open building that's about 8 stories tall.
Wow. What happened in there? How did they do that?
So they
a mystery.
They cooked the sugar. That's how the sugar came to be. And so that's how they turned it white. So if you look at, like, now they talk about different types of sugar. You've got your brown sugar, and then you've got your white sugar, and then you have the cane sugar that is our people sell now. And so mm-hmm. that is where they turned sugar granules white.
Very cool.
Yeah.
Okay, so grand vision, what happens to the char house in the next iteration?
There's been a lot of different ideas floated around. We've always wondered and hoped for a building that has some sort of a public space inside of it. Like the first floor could be a public space that we could still have access to it to be able to, again, come in and see this repurposed building and have a new life to it. You know, hopefully with that, we could have maybe a little restaurant or just a space that you could maybe rent and go in inside and maybe have a wedding or some sort of an event down there. But then kind of like with a lot of the mixed-use developments you see across the country now, the ability to have maybe some office space in between. Mm-hmm. And then what we all hope and dream for, everyone I talk to, is we all want a rooftop bar, right?
Yeah.
Something to go sit on top. Yeah. And you can see the whole city.
Whole town,
it's
yeah.
one of our tallest buildings, right? So you're on Oyster Creek. You can look out. You can see our downtown that we built about 20 years years ago. You can see Constellation Field. You can see our airport. You can even see to downtown Houston. So it'd be what I would love to see is that it be repurposed that way. So you kind of have two public spaces, maybe on the top and the bottom, and then you can have some private offices in between.
And how about live work apartments?
You know, so we have talked to people about apartments and or a hotel, but with the proximity to the railroad, it would be challenging because you have the
sound issues.
The sound and then the vibrations as well. So the vibrations aren't strong. Mm-hmm. Some people notice them, some people don't. But ideally, you probably don't want to have people staying there nightly or just even living there. They might become a problem. So that's why we kind of look to more of the daytime occupancy. Yeah.
Then there's that giant warehouse building.
Yes.
Beautiful old brick building that's humongous.
Yep.
Best vision for that space.
So that's called the Three Bay Warehouse, and it is Three Bay Warehouse because it is three separate sections, and we would really love to see a brewery or a distillery or some sort of a interactive space where you can kind of have the manufacturing occurring of whether it be beer or some sort of liquor or wine. But then you would also have a space that maybe we could put a restaurant on the front. We could still do tours, and you preserve the structure, right? So you still have the ability to have a use inside of there, but you still kind of see the original, the skin of the building, and hopefully not covered up or painted. You have that, that beautiful red brick.
Yeah, and it's probably over 100 years old, right? The
probably,
building?
Probably, yeah. I don't know. There's different structures have been built at different times. So I don't know all of that. I'm sure we've got it documented somewhere, though.
But just looking at it, you know, it's, you know, 1920s probably would be new.
Yes.
So exciting.
Yeah.
Kind of on the frontier of rebirth.
Yep.
And I can say I was here. Next time I come back.
There you go. Hopefully, knock on wood, right?
I know.
Something that we've got a shovel in the ground, hopefully. We'll give you a call.
Yeah, that'd be so cool.
Yeah.
So you are in active solicitation of partnerships. And this is like a typical Sugarland vision of private-public funding marriage.
Absolutely. So whenever the first visioning project was going through the process, we set up what's called a tax increment reinvestment zone. And then we also, through the legislature, created the Imperial Redevelopment District. Mm-hmm. So both of those different tools have been collecting revenue over time to develop not just this site, but the land around us, right? So that's part of the tools that were used to build the area around Constellation Field. So a lot of what you've seen developed.
The baseball stadium.
Yes, our minor league baseball stadium. The
major Sugar minor.
Space Cowboys. Very excited about
Triple
it.
Triple A.
We made it. We did it.
I love it.
Yeah, so we have these financing tools already in place, collecting revenue to build the infrastructure around here. A lot of it was raw land and needed water, sewer, roads, drainage to all occur so that we could develop it. So it's one of our financing mechanisms that are in place.
It's really an interesting double-edged sword because it's a blessing in that you have all this raw land.
Mm-hmm.
So it's a paradox, you know, here you are 20, 22, going to 23, and you're on the frontier.
Yeah.
Yeah. Some places have no place to go but up or to tear down.
So we are a little bit in that position, though, around the Constellation Field, the baseball stadium, and around here is really only our last few parcels of land. Mm-hmm. Behind the airport, we have the central prison unit where we hope to build that into an industrial park. And then we do own that property. And then in front of around Smart Financial Center, which is our performing arts venue, there's some property there that's left that we hope to develop into mixed use as well.
Mm-hmm. That's a lot more raw land than some places.
Yes, that's true. But we're at that point where we're not in high growth mode anymore. And that's new for us. So we're trying to figure out what does redevelopment look like? What is the last few parcels of land that we have left? What's the highest and best use for them?
Mm-hmm.
How do we make sure that our employment growth and our residential growth is growing together?
One of the other fascinating anomalies of Sugarland has to do, this is Texas talking now, has to do with the inordinate high level of education of people in this town. I read it was like 60% are college graduate.
Or higher, correct.
Yeah, or higher. And that's double of the state average.
Yep.
That's an anomaly.
It is. Mm-hmm. Yep.
Then another wonderful dynamic is the multi ethnic mm-hmm. matrix, and I think that 60% plus are people of color.
Correct.
And that's an anomaly. There are some towns in Texas that are very white and have always been very white.
Yeah, no, our diversity definitely speaks volumes to, I think, a few years ago, they said the Houston Metro and especially Fort Bend County is probably a bigger portion of that. What the rest of the country is going to look like in 2035, mm-hmm. you know, further closer to 2040, we're the future of what our country is going to look like. And so it's really cool to have that diversity and have that population that drives our culture, right? So we've got some amazing food here because we have such a diversity in culture. You have a lot of different Asian groups that are fuel different kinds of foods. You've got Thai food. We've got Chinese food. We've got some amazing Indian food.
Yesterday, I was with the brother-in-laws from Venezuela.
Venezuela? Yeah. Exactly. Yeah. So,
and of course, they opened a sushi place first. And
Isn't that funny?
Yeah.
It's, what is it, Asian fusion? We've got amazing, amazing, talented people here in this community. And so how do we figure out how to bring the right businesses and the right retail and establishments to kind of cater to that, to those people?
Mm-hmm. And another cool dynamic is in-house in the town, you have a community college.
Correct.
And then you have the new University of Houston campus.
Absolutely. Very proud.
Yeah, including a whole nursing school.
Mm-hmm.
It's like you're your own little universe.
We are. Yeah. We're very lucky. And it's amazing because we're really not that far from Houston either. We're 20 minutes southwest mm-hmm. down the interstate. Very quick trip. And so we do. We have our own little world. And what I, again, another thing that drew me to Sugarland was that we don't wait on the private sector to bring what we want for our community. We go out and get it. So we use our economic development tools to build Constellation Field. We own that real estate.
Oh, interesting.
We built Smart Financial Center.
Wow.
Right. So we own that real estate. And then we partnered with amazing operators. So we know we're not in the business of finding bands and concerts or running a baseball team. That's not what that mm-hmm. we're good at. But what we are good at is going and figuring out what we want in our community and going and getting it and building it and then finding the right people to partner with. And it's become an incredible amenities for our residents, but it's also incredible for our economic development. Because you have people that come in from the outside, they come here, they spend their money here, they hopefully stay at our hotels, mm-hmm. and then they go back home, but we continue to fuel our economy from outside, which is how we stay healthy. We have a healthy economy.
That's really cool.
Yeah, it's
speaking,
a lot of fun.
Yeah, speaking of inbound tourism, mm-hmm. what would you say, you know, I'm sure you know the stats of where do people come from?
Mm-hmm.
You know, how far a radius, and do you draw people from Denver and Chicago.
Mm-hmm. So the interesting part is before COVID, it's changed. So we used to be what's known as a business travel community. So we would have a lot of overseas travelers. We would have a lot of people from even just across the country, right? So, and even South America, we had a lot of travel from South America. But now with COVID, business travel, it all ceased, right? And so you really found what we had more of is leisure travel. And so that has continued. So with leisure travel, and especially during COVID, people they didn't want to get on an airplane. So they were trying to figure out where to drive from. So a lot of that is we're having people from the Austin area, the Dallas area, even South Louisiana, and some parts of Oklahoma. Mm-hmm. We're driving here to either visit family or visit others. So a lot of Texas travel is what's coming, but you'd be interested. What we've loved and what we've found is Smart Financial Center, for example, our performing arts venue, has done a lot of Hispanic shows. And we actually have seen an increase in travel from Mexico and even Brownsville and down by mm-hmm. the valley.
Ground,
so they are coming here for those shows. So we are continuing, like, not only are they just coming in and maybe having dinner and then going to the show and then going back home into Houston, mm-hmm. they're coming here, they're spending the night, they're
making
going shopping.
Out of it,
right. So we're excited. And even our hospitals, you see this, the medical center expanding and creating many hubs in the suburbs. But for us, they're really focused here in Sugarland because on 59, you've got that direct access south. And so we're creating almost a mini medical center out here because you've got people are wanting to stop and not go into the med center and not have to pay for parking and stuff like that. So we've got those amenities. That's really exciting to be able to have that ability to service others.
And you have some major medical partners, Herman.
Memorial Herman, and yeah. then Houston Methodist. We also have St. Luke's, and MD Anderson is also here, and they lease space out of the St. Luke's Hospital.
That's pretty major.
Yeah, it is. And then there's some others that are private as well. So we've got a lot.
And what's the population of Sugar Land?
The most recent census is about 111,000.
Mm-hmm. A little bit more.
Sure.
Something we haven't touched on.
So one thing that we've really focused on starting back in 2014 is we are a very wealthy community. We've got a high, like you said, a highly educated community. But one thing that was identified as missing was the cultural arts, was art program. And so how do we bring more beauty and more art to our community in a very tactical way?
In public or?
Public art, yeah. Correct. Absolutely. We want it to be accessible and enjoyable by all, to bring whimsy to our community. Mm-hmm. And so what we did was we established a public art plan, and we have been working on different variations of public art over time since then. Our goal is to hopefully get into performing arts in a different way, more not to compete with Smart Financial,
sure.
but more of like the, you know, youth orchestras and stuff like that. And how do we, again, hire those people, bring them to a public park or a public space so people can enjoy. But we really got activated this last year. We did a lot of work through COVID. The artist community was one of the most heavily impacted, because they were very heavily impacted. Mm-hmm. And so we were like, how can we help our local businesses and help keep them busy? And then we also had, like, through experience and exposure to our Sugarland Police Department and Sugarland Fire Department, and just even what you heard throughout the community is mental health crisis. People weren't used to being so alone, right? And to have so little access to other people and to just their day-to-day stuff.
There's some specific programs and a program that you guys are just launched that's mm-hmm. a game changer. Tell us about that.
Yeah, so through all of that exposure, we were like, what can we do? How do we reach out and tell people that there's help for them, that suicide doesn't have to be their only option? And that's a really hard thing to figure out, how do we do that? But we brainstormed, and just out of a random meeting, it was like, let's just put some murals up to. And so what we ended up doing was we partnered with Hope for the Day and another organization, and use some of their language. They've got certain sayings that they've copyrighted, and so we took, like, have hope and hope heals, and we had contracted with some local mural artists and had some paintings done. And so there were four installations that were done throughout the community in our public parks, because a lot of suicides that were happening in our public parks.
Oh, wow.
And so it was like, well, we don't know if we can change anything for them, but maybe this beautiful art that mm-hmm. is. And the artist did a really great job of, she actually put local flora and fauna. One of them has a lot of birds that actually exist and live in that mm-hmm. park. And so it was really neat to see. And then we put together a QR code that was on the mural itself. We still track the data to see how it's doing, and we ended up building a website on our SugarlandTX.gov website. We had a page dedicated to all the resources that are out there.
And is there any way to track a pulse beat? Is it actually working and getting through to those people who you want the message to go to?
I would say we just check the activity to make sure, like, it's not declining. Is it sky high? No. I don't know if there's any transactions. Like, there's no way to tell if someone that looked up the suicide hotline, prevention hotline, if they actually made a call. We don't know that information. Mm-hmm. But
wasn't there another adjunct to that program, kind of a call-in?
Oh, yes.
Yeah.
We did the mental health boxes. So
talk to us about that. That's fascinating.
So a lot of communities across the country have done, like, little wooden boxes that they called libraries. And a lot of neighborhoods have done them. And so what we did was we did a call for artists, and we had woodworkers build these wood boxes. And then we had contracted with artists to paint the large group of people throughout the community that ended up painting them, in a local woodworker who did them all. And what we did was one just very bright, happy type of artwork done on each box. And then inside of them, we stocked them with mental health resources. So
what's the graphic message that somebody would see that would attract them to open the door?
I think just the fact that they were painted and beautiful, and mm-hmm. there was no messaging on those boxes mm-hmm. themselves, But,
so you had to be curious.
You had to be curious. And a lot of people recognize these types of boxes. I don't know that they're all painted. They're usually just wooden with a little plexiglass in mm-hmm. the front. Ours were painted to draw more attention to them. But most people go in them thinking that they are for books that people have used and don't want anymore, and kind of that exchange system. But we had resources for mental health to kind of keep track of them. A lot of people try to put books in them and take all the mental health resources out. Oh, but so yeah. we're constantly stocking. Them. Yeah. But yeah, it was a way just again.
Because they thought they were little mini libraries.
Exactly, exactly. Yeah. But you know, it was one of those things like the resources were going away. And one of our staff persons that was out there restocking one day, one of the ones that was put in by a high school, the kids came over and asked and were curious. And so like how amazing, like we could have, none of that conversation would have ever happened had we not tried to be out there in the community. And so it was kind of our way of trying to figure out how do we give back? How do we try to help when we're not the front line? We're not the police officers right. and the EMS officers that are saving people's lives, but what else can we do? Mm-hmm. So it was really fun and it was exciting, and we hope to do more of that.
That's really cool.
Yeah.
Okay, one more.
Sure.
One question for you. Uh-huh. I had briefly talked with the mayor about this. Is policing mm-hmm. in Sugar Land, which is very evolved compared to a lot of places, any insights there?
You know, I think, again, what's really great about Sugar Land is that we're forward thinking. We're always trying to figure out what's the best new innovation, what's the best technology out there that we can take, that we can utilize. And so they're called LPR, license plate recognition. And so we're using cameras to track bad guys or to, we're always kind of on the forefront. We're out there in the community and we're, you know, hanging out where you can't really be seen, but we're catching the bad guys in the act, which is really cool. And then the other thing is we've been fortunate enough to have businesses here in the community that we've been able to partner with. So Trafficware, they're now known as Cubic, is a company who was established here a good while ago. And they are a company that handles the traffic signals. Mm-hmm. So, you know, people sometimes know, I don't know how many people really know that there's software and technology behind the algorithms that change your traffic lights. So we work with them to kind of test some of their new products out. It's kind of cool because we get to be on the forefront of the traffic technology uh-huh. while we're not necessarily in partnering with them, and they get a lot of data to improve their technology.
Perfect partner.
So yeah, so yeah. It's fantastic that we've been partners with a lot of our businesses over time. So it's really fun.
Love it. Perfect
yeah.
world.
Yeah. Yeah. It's a lot of fun. We mm-hmm. have a good time.
There are a lot of places where the city hall and the building department and whatnot, they're like the enemy camp relative to business people.
Yeah. So. No, our job, our goal is to make it as easy as possible and as seamless as possible to do business in Sugar Land. So yeah. we want to make the path as easy as we can. Mm-hmm. You know, even during Harvey, you know, we had people, we were calling our businesses to see how they're doing and see if they're okay. And, you know, they call us, like one of them did have a little bit of water that came into their office building, and they knew who to call. They didn't just call 911 or right. call the fire department. They called us. So from an economic development standpoint, that's pretty successful.
Pretty cool. Yeah. yeah.
That we got to be a little bit on the front lines of all of that.
I love it. Okay. You know what this means? I have to come back.
Yes, sir. Absolutely. We can't wait.
Me neither, because you're right on the cusp of some really cool development.
Yeah, something special. It's yeah. coming.
To learn more about your world, mm-hmm. go to your website would be?
SugarlandEcoDev.com.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's pretty cool.
And my name is Elizabeth Huff, Director of Economic Development. And my email address is ehuff@sugarlandtx.gov. And we hope to hear from you.
Awesome. Elizabeth, thank you so much. Another great day in paradise.
Yeah.
yeah. I'm your host, Tom Wilmer, reporting from Sugar Land, Texas. We'll see you here.
The underbed music was performed by Texas Hill Country musician and singer-songwriter John Arthur Martinez.
You've been listening to the Lowell Thomas award-winning travel show Journeys of Discovery with Tom Wilmer, a featured podcast on NPR.org's podcast directory. Produced by California Central Coast NPR affiliate KCBX. You are invited to subscribe to Journeys of Discovery with Tom Wilmer on NPR.org, NPR One, iTunes, Stitcher.com, and more than 20 other podcast channels around the world. To learn more about Tom Wilmer's journeys around America and the world, log on to thomaswilmer.com.
My name is Roseanne Cash. I listen to WNYC in New York. In fact, NPR is all I listen to. And if I didn't have NPR, I would feel like my lifeline to the world has been cut. So, yes, please support your local NPR station.
I'm too young to marry. Take me back to Texas. I'm too young to marry. Down to the railroad and I laid my head down on the track. I thought about that gal of mine, gradually eased it back. Take me back to Texas, I'm too young to marry. Take me back to Texas, I'm too young to marry. Travel all around this country, music by the hour. Always wear this great big smile, we never do look sour. Take me back to Texas, I'm too young to marry. Take me back to Texas, I'm too young to marry. Take me back to Texas, I'm too young to marry. Take me back to Texas, I'm too young to marry. Otra. Vamos. One and a two and a one, two, three. Talk Susie, walk and talk Susie, walk and talk Susie. Take me back to Texas, I'm too young to marry. Take me back to Texas, I'm too young to marry. Come on, take me back to Texas, I'm too young to marry. Take me back to Texas, I'm too young to marry.